When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You are listening to Tax Able with Natasha Herron.
Welcome back to Series 2 of Tax Able with Tash. During this season, I will take you on a deep dive into 12 different industries. Each industry has its own tax consideration and complexities. Together, we will discuss key points to help you feel empowered about tax for your business. In addition to the weekly episodes, I've interviewed a key player within that industry. Want to know how they've achieved their success? Or see whether their journey is similar to yours? Well, make sure you tune in each week. Hello and welcome to an episode of Tax Able. Today I am joined by Jeff Doble, who is the founder of Dexter's Estate Agency. So Jeff, for people that are listening who may not know who Dexter's are, can you just give me an overview of the company?
Yes, hello Natasha. Well, we are a London estate agent. We operate in all sorts of markets across London. Quite a reasonable sized company now. We turn over about £150 million a year, and I have 1,500 colleagues. Last year we helped 25,000 Londoners move home. So we're quite busy, and we have grown over the years from a single shop up to over 100 now. So it's been quite a journey.
Going back to the start, how did you come up with the idea of Dexter's?
Well, I trained as a surveyor originally, and so was interested in the property industry. And I worked for a smaller company back in the 1980s, long time ago. And in those days, a lot of big insurance companies were quite interested in the sector, and they bought up a lot of estate agency, including the company that I worked for. And on the high street, there were various agents that you won't see now, because as corporate agents, they didn't actually fare very well. So there was GA Property Services, which is now Aviva Insurers. There was Cornerstone, which was Abbey National. The Prudential had estate agencies more than anyone else all over the country, and also the Halifax as well, you know. So those big four chains really dominated the industry for probably a decade, really, I would think. But as I say, they found it really tough to change small businesses, really, from running in an entrepreneurial way to a corporate, big company type approach, and all of them failed at it, really, and lost a lot of money. I moved from the company I was in, and I worked for one of them for 4 years, and learned a lot, really, a lot of positives about running a bigger company. On balance, probably mostly how not to do it. I think they actually failed, and they didn't do very well, and there were good reasons for that, and I think those learnings were really important, you know, in running my own business in the future. So that was how I got going in a business of my own, was that I sort of ran out of steam working for somebody else, and the corporate model was looking as though it was going to fail, really. So I was looking at other jobs. I thought I could go and do something else, but in the end, you know, if you can do what you can do and you can do it well, then that's what you should do. And so the rest is history.
Yeah, it's definitely better to make the mistakes on someone else's time. So did you always want to work for yourself?
That is about circumstance, really. Had my original company not been sold, I'd probably still be there, I think. And so the answer to you is probably no. It was the whole corporate thing, really, that made me tired of working for others. And suddenly I thought, look, it's going to be a lot easier to work for yourself. And that's how that came about. And so we, you know, I sort of dreamt up a company and a name, and you know, sort of got started in a small shop in Twickenham in Southwest London. That's where I started.
So how did you come up with the name of Dexter's? Is there a story behind it? Most people choose their last name.
Yes. Well, my last name is often mispronounced, and I think it doesn't, it's not that easy. Therefore, it made sense, I think, to come up with another name over the door. And I was with some friends thinking of names for my company, and somebody came up with Dexter's, which stood out really. And I'm a big cricket fan. So Ted Dexter was a cricketing hero of mine when I was younger, a bit like a Freddie Flintoff or a Ben Stokes. He was the sort of swashbuckling cricketer of the day. I read he died recently, and in his obituary he was described as being fearless and dashing, and I always thought, well, that's a great sort of person to nobody really asks about the name nowadays, but you know, I think he remains a bit of an inspiration to us.
So since you started the journey with Dexter's, and I think you started around 1993, is there anything you accredit to your success or any lessons that you've learned over the period? I don't like to use the term failures too much, but obviously we all learn when we make a mistake.
Talking about your first question, which is the journey, really, it was 1993 mm-hmm. when we started. And, you know, we grew bit by bit, went from one to two to three offices. And, you know, it's been quite a long journey since then, actually. I don't know how long you've got, but I could, you know, it's nearly 30 years.
But all the time in the world.
Good. Well, it's two stories which kind of sum up what's happened, really, if you like. And the first was that we started doing lettings. And that might seem an obvious thing for agents mm-hmm. to do now, but back then it was a fairly new industry, really, because buy-to-let, if you like, had only just got started. You know, it was only recently possible to do that back in the early 1990s. And we'd got to the stage where our fees were about £40,000 a month. You know, we had a number of offices and things were going pretty well, but we had one bookkeeper and one property manager, and it was a load of hassle. I mean, it's an industry that there is an enormous amount behind the scenes that goes on. There's a lot of legislation, there's a lot of support work. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure that we were really wowing customers, to be honest. I think, you know, I worked out then that lettings was better off done at scale. And what I really needed was a team of bookkeepers and a team of property managers who could really do the job beautifully. And I think when you were reliant on just one person as a small, relatively small business, it was really tough to do it well. So I remember saying to my management team at the time that it's all very well turning over 40,000 a month, and we've done well to get to that. But really, this part of our business needs to turn over 400,000 a month. You know, we need to be 10 times as big. And there were some doubters, I remember, you know, one or two people who sort of thought, really, you know, what, we're going to go 10 times what we're doing now. But I started mm-hmm. buying some smaller lettings companies and to try and grow the business like that, of which there were hundreds in London. A lot of people had started up quite small businesses. And, you know, that helped us to grow. And then we got a good reputation and we started picking up a lot of London landlords. And we now work for over 30,000 landlords in London, you know. So that side of our business has gone well. And a similar story about trying to recruit somebody to run the business alongside me. And I went out after a guy called Andy Shepherd, who is still our chief executive at the moment, really talented man, and he was working for a big company, and I was trying to tempt him to come work for us. And I explained to him that we had four offices and we turned over £1.5 million a year, and I said, in 15 years this is what we're going to be worth, and this is what you're going to get out of this, and we're going to turn over £75 million by that time, and we'll have 40 offices. To his eternal credit, he did believe me. I'm not sure whether I entirely believe it. It was a mammoth growth, because it was 50 times what we were then doing. And anyway, life went on, and we grew, and the business was going nicely. And literally 15 years later, he walked in and said, "You'll never believe this. I've just found this." And I'd produced a fancy graph to sell this story. And he presented it, threw it on the desk, and he said, "That's incredible." Because in the 15th year from when he joined us, we turned over £75 million exactly, like to within thousands of pounds. And you can take from that what you will, really. But
you manifested it. You're always thinking big.
By that time, we'd moved on and we were thinking about other things. But probably big plans and big targets are easier to achieve, really. You know, you come up with something wild and actually you could actually pull it off. But also that you should plan ahead. I mean, generally, we would always plan 5 years ahead. But to be honest, when you're building a business, you need to be thinking 10 and 15 years ahead, and you've got to, okay, you may not get it right. You might not get it right as we did, but hey, look, it wasn't a complete fluke that we hit the exact number, because it had clearly been in the back of our mind. So I think the lesson is that planning is good, and perhaps more than 5 years, not a bad thing.
Yeah, because you don't know how the market's going to change as well.
You have no idea. But those two things sort of illustrate, I suppose, how we built the business. You know, what I'm particularly proud of is our brilliant directors and managers that we've got right across London. It's a team game, so we rely on all of our talented and loyal colleagues who combine to make the business what it is. And particularly that as a group, we've still got the energy and passion that we had as a startup. And that is really important to keep that feeling going within the business, which we do manage to do.
So you mentioned before that you grew by purchasing smaller letting agencies. Do you think that's a good idea for people that are looking to grow? Perhaps people have just started getting into, you know, launch their own estate agency business. If they were looking to expand or grow, do you think growth in that way is the better option?
It worked for us because we were buying books of landlords, really, you know, who came with the business.
Mm-hmm.
But you asked about challenges, and buying another company is mm-hmm. probably the biggest challenge, really, because you are buying an entirely different culture and an entirely different way of doing things. I mean, we buy lettings businesses. I can't tell you how everyone does it incredibly differently, and you wouldn't believe it. You'd sort of think, well, you're all doing the same thing. So it is very different. And also, not everybody likes joining forces with another company. And so we always look at the people that we are buying, and we think probably a third of the staff are going to be brilliant and stay with us and love what they do. A third will go quite quickly for whatever reason, and another mm-hmm. third will probably leave in a year or two. And so you have to you've got to be fairly tough, because you've got to create a culture that is the same as your own, and you really can't compromise, you know, because it is all about having a way of doing business. And so buying other businesses can be incredibly problematical, really. And it has become a bit of an art for us to join forces with other companies. I mean, other difficulties that we've had over the years, cash, I suppose, would be the biggest. You know, for the first 10 years of being in business, we were constantly overdrawn. All credit cards, all facilities, everything at max the whole time. And there's a seasonal pattern to our business, so we tend to earn more money in the spring and summer, and then we burn more cash over the winter. And what we learned to do was to forecast and manage that well. So whenever we looked like we were going to get some money in, we went and opened another office, and so we never actually got into a better cash position. Really, you know, but I think it was about 10 years. And eventually by then we had enough offices that were doing well. So we actually produced a positive cash position at the bank. I remember it to this day. It was very exciting in 2003, almost exactly 10 years in. So, you know, that was a weird moment. But cash is, you know, cash and cash control and cash, you know, really understanding where your cash flow is going to go. Fundamentally important, really, and that was something that we learned to do quite early on.
I bet it was quite daunting, though, constantly looking at your forecast and your cash position, to not to be overdrawn for 10 years, you've got to know what direction you're going in and have a lot of belief in yourself to keep going.
Yes, you're right. I mean, it is about understanding your business and how the pipeline of business comes through. Because for us, if I take your property up for sale today, then it could well be anything from sort of 4 to 6 months until I get paid. But I've got to do all the work, really. And so in that, and actually you might decide after 3 or 4 months you can't find what you want to move to and decide not to move. Mm-hmm. So from that point of view, you've got to be confident in being able to sell property, to let it, and to earn fees, and to know when that money's going to come in. And so we do have a lot of management information that helps us to call that, really. You know, understanding your business is important, and it was certainly crucial to us as we were growing, because we grew out of our earnings, so we didn't have funders, or we didn't, you know, have people come in and give us money. You know, we were dependent on our success in order to grow.
So you mentioned that you first got into lettings, and then obviously you're in lettings, residential lettings and sales as well. Do you think that agents should specialise in one area, or should they have a mix of portfolio of both?
Well, funnily enough, they're quite different skill sets, really, lettings and sales. And we have entirely separate teams that do that. So if you were going into one of our offices, you'd see a whole lettings team and a whole sales team. So we don't mm-hmm. we don't really do both, but they are a service to property owners in London, so therefore both of them have some synergy from that point of view. But we are a bit more wide ranging than that. I mean, we are a firm of chartered surveyors, so you know, we have qualified people at the head of all of our businesses, and we also do a wide range of other work, from land and development advice to new homes, build to rent projects, estate and property management. We do, you know, so we would look after whole blocks of flats and estates, and all of the accounting and management work that is involved in that. All of which it's all related, but they are very different skill sets, really. And we do various things like corporate services and to big companies, and international relocation services, and these sorts of specializations all come together. So I would be a fan, in answer to your question, of of multidisciplinary firm, a bit like a surveyors or a solicitors would be, or accountants. I mean, you know, but you do need within that your experts and your specialists.
I do find that the government at the moment is tackling lettings, so they are imposing less reliefs and more tax on landlords. So I think it's definitely good to specialize, or like have a mixed portfolio, just because you never know what rule is going to come in, and it may mean that a certain revenue stream that you've got is going to be unintentionally impacted as well.
Oh yeah, I mean, lettings is forever being tinkered with by government, really. And, you know, the numbers of rules, legislation, regulations for a landlord now are huge, really. And so in some ways that helps us, because we know how to do it and do it well, and we can give good advice. Yes, I would, in answer to your question about income streams, the biggest one was where agents were banned from charging fees to tenants. What had happened over the years was that in order to attract landlords, some agents had started charging landlords less and then making that up with charges to tenants. Overall, it probably came out in the wash, but the result was that tenants were getting ripped off by some companies, and it made a big mm-hmm. difference to our income flow, really. I mean, fortunately, as I say, we are quite a traditional agent, so we had always charged our clients, the landlords, for doing the job, and the charges to tenants were relatively minimal, so it didn't actually impact on us. But for some companies, it wiped out their entire profit line, particularly smaller firms, you know, that they were charging tenants so much comparatively that they then just didn't make any money really, you know. So they, you know, they really were competing a bit unfairly really by charging less. So, I mean, that was an example of where, of where the whole industry changed almost overnight with some legislation. But landlords' legislation, and you know, is changing by the month really, you know, it is quite complex really. But keeps us in business.
So you, Dexter's focus is mainly in London. Have you ever thought about expanding nationwide?
Not at the moment, really. London has kept us pretty busy, really. I mean, it's such a vast place with so many different markets. And we're very focused on different markets. I mean, we're a big firm now, and we're, you know, we, if you counted up the offices, then you could say that we were bigger than others. But we don't tend to count, oddly.
Yeah.
We like to be a bit, to feel that like a small company, and our focus is very much on, you know, on our particular markets, the markets that we work in. So, for example, we're working hard in Wimbledon and Streatham and Hackney and Highgate. You know, these are really important businesses for us, and we're very focused on those. We don't have a head office. We have support teams that are dotted around in different places, but our entire focus is on our offices in particular locations, and they are our head offices, if you like, you know. And so we still want to be a small company, even though we've grown, and we still want to retain that feel. But we are dotted around the whole of London. And so to repeat the quality of what you do in so many places is a challenge, really. We think it would translate outside of London. I mean, London is just a very busy lettings market, and therefore that has worked well for our business model. But there are markets that, you know, that we think that we could be in over time. Right now, though, we still reckon there's over half of London that we haven't even got close to. So we're going to be kept pretty busy for a while, I think.
Yeah, you've just opened an office down the road from me in Tooting. So you are now expanding out to the Tooting area.
Yeah, well, we opened in Wimbledon a few years ago, and that went well. And we've always really liked the idea of Tooting. It's one of those great places where it used to be down the end of the Northern Line, and you know, now it's a real real sort of booming market, exciting place to be, and we're in a lot of similar markets to that around London, which we love, you know, places that are coming on. We've recently bought a couple of companies down in South East London, and so we're in New Cross now and Peckham and places which my mother, who was born and bred in London, would say, "Oh, I'd never have gone there." But of course, now are, you know, are exciting places to live. And so it used to be that if a Waitrose was going to an area, that that would be a good place for us to go. But I think it's now a microbrewery, really. You know, if it's sort of if it's got a sort of trendy undercurrent, then that's a market to watch out for. You know, so yeah, we're excited to be in new markets and up and coming areas. And, but I mean, Tooting, we're just late there. I mean, it's already up and come, hasn't it?
It's still got some growth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Down my road. So I live in a row of terraced houses, and pretty much every single one is being developed into flats. So now, instead of it being occupied by, you know, one family, you've got four flats, five flats high. So it's expanding quickly.
It has changed. I mean, there are rows and rows of Victorian houses there, all of which are really lovely. And so there are a lot of family houses there as well, and people seem to be able to move around there, really, you know. So, no, we're very excited about being in Tooting. You're right. It was one of our one of our projects of last year, and it's a market we think we can do well in. You know, you have to. It's like everywhere you go, nobody knows you when you arrive. They kind of may have vaguely heard of you before. You know, it's how good you are in Tooting that matters. It's not anything else, you know. Mm-hmm. So we're very focused on, you know, on that office and on doing a great job for local people, getting word of mouth recommendation, getting people to talk to us. You know, that's very much our business.
I was going to ask you what sets Dexter's apart from other London estate agents, but I think you've hit the nail on the head by saying that you try to keep the small firm feel and that focusing on doing well in that area and replicating it.
Yeah, I would say that's probably right. We have an academy in London, and where we coach and train all of our staff across London. It's up in Pimlico, and it's kind of at the sort of heart of the company, if you like. We just train and develop all of our staff there and make sure that our culture is strong. And you know, our culture's at the heart of what we do, because we're in so many different places, because you're trying to keep the same standard of work for our customers everywhere, then our culture is really important to us. We're a bit of a cult, really. It's all about our habits and our what we do, and we have our winning ways and our service standards, and we do things in a certain way. But ultimately, you've got to rely on the team on the ground to be entrepreneurial and to do business. So you can have an underlying culture, but it does depend then on having great people who deliver the rest, really. But I would say that is what sets us apart.
Did anyone or anything inspire you while you were growing? Or I'll do a twofold question because I seem to like those. Does anyone inspire you now?
I would say, in answer to your first bit of question, I think what really inspired me, and still does to an extent, is that estate agents have such a poor reputation, really. I think that when I set up the company, the biggest thing we want to do was to be really, really good at what we do and just set ourselves apart. And I think that I wanted people that work with me to feel proud about who they work for and what they did for a living. And if you look now on the internet, you'll see we've got about 40,000 Google reviews at an average of 4.9. And you don't get those by not being good at what you do. And because people are very mm-hmm. critical. So, and they should be, they're paying us money. They want the job done and they should tell us if they're not happy. So, you know, we are inspired by doing things better, really. And that is at the heart of the firm.
And how do you find juggling running a company and making sure that you're aware of its various tax implications or considerations?
It's a good question. Well, again, I'll answer that in two bits. So I sort of, as the company's got bigger, so I've probably taken a lesser role, really. I've got a fantastic management team who run the company. And in amongst those is a chief financial officer who is brilliant at everything I'm not, which is keeping an eye on all the finances, the accounting for the firm, the planning, the forecasting and everything else. And so we've now got a brilliant team to do that. So as the company's got bigger, it's been easier. I think going back to when it was just me and I didn't have those sorts of resources, I sort of befriended a tax advisor quite early on and sat down with them on a regular basis, really, regardless. Rather than going to them with questions, I would tend to sit with them every 4 months and say, look, this is what the company is now doing. This is where I'm going. This is what, you know, I'm buying a company, or I'm employing this person, or I'm setting up this bonus scheme. And, you know, by chatting to someone, so tax issues sort of came to light, which they probably wouldn't have done until after the event. And as we got bigger, we got to a stage where I wasn't doing so much of it. And I think we lost contact a little bit with that tax advisor. And I think we made a couple of mistakes as a result. So I think the thing that I've learned is that you should be meeting somebody regularly and stick with somebody who really understands your business and knows what's going on, because all of the tax stuff is all in context, isn't it? It's, you know, you have to understand the company. And although you can read about this stuff on the internet, you know, there's nothing better than somebody understanding your particular business. Really.
Yeah, it's always better to talk to someone early on than for us to put out fires later down the road.
Things you're thinking of doing rather than things you've done, yes.
Yes. And is there any advice you'd give to your younger self?
Wow, okay. I think that I don't spend a lot of time looking backwards, to be honest. I'm quite a sort of forward planner, so that's quite a difficult mm-hmm. question to answer, really. But I suppose to my younger self, running a business, any leadership of a business, can be a lonely job, really. If you talk to people that do it, they often say that fear is a big factor, fear of messing up or letting down people that you've employed or customers. You know, fear is a big thing. And I think if I was to offer some advice, I'd go back and offer myself a bit of reassurance and encouragement, really, that, you know, I was on the right track. And if I kept doing what I was doing and doing it well that I'd win through. That might have saved a few sleepless nights. As it happened, I made it through. But I think you do worry a lot, really, and I think it is lonely as a leader sometimes. So those are good things to remember, I think, is to have the courage of your convictions and to believe that it is going to be fine, that you know, you're probably not making mistakes, really. Looking back, it's been a brilliant journey and I've loved every minute of it and still do.
Well, you've been very successful, so you've definitely made the right decisions and you've got the outcome that you wanted because you met your target after 15 years, was it?
Yes, that was our first one, so we've obviously got different targets now. But
yeah, one of many targets.
Some good milestones along the way, some really good milestones along the way, and I think that those are important, really, as I've explained, in terms of planning and in terms of really thinking as far ahead as you possibly can, really. But yes, it's a great being in business and running your own firm is a brilliant thing, and the advantages and the positives and the colleagues that you work with far outweigh all of the challenges.
Well, thank you for taking the time today to speak to everyone that's listening about Dexter's and about its journey. And if anyone is thinking of starting their own estate agency or is just interested in any tax considerations within that industry, then please make sure that you have a listen to the separate episode, and I will be looking at the tax implications in detail. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you.
You are listening to Tax Able with Natasha Heron.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please click subscribe to listen to new episodes as they're released. Make sure you're following on Instagram, TikTok, and the newly launched YouTube channel.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.